SourceTrunk, a weekly trunkload of open source.
Hi, and welcome to SourceTrunk episode 9, recorded on Monday the 20th of November 2006. This podcast will try to demystify the beautiful beast that is open source and show the listeners the more practical examples of open source and free software. I will do this by taking a random open source project and try it out. I'll be drinking a Morsubit Creek Lambic with this episode. It's very difficult to pronounce that in English when you're not really used to it. In French, it would be Morsubit. Une Creek Lambic, and it's a beer which dates from 1604 in the Pelterland near Brussels, and it has a character that can be compared to the character of the region. That means rolling hills, fertile meadows, and easygoing people living in it. Let's see. That's more or less the spirit of all Morsubit beers. There are a few of them, from which Creek Lambic is just one. This beer is made of Belgian cherries, and it has to mature at least 5 months in oak vats. Now, the Creek is best drunk in a balloon glass with a very open top. I'm not too fond of sweet beer, but for the Morsubit, I'll really make an exception, because it's not too sweet. It's a bit in between, and it's a nice mixture of sour and sweetness. Okay. And it's not too sweet. Let's go.
System tools.
TrueCrypt. Why would you need TrueCrypt? I'll try to give some examples why you would need this software. For example, if you're not too confident about the fact that your laptop can be stolen at any time and somebody could look into your data on the hard drive, then TrueCrypt could be the software for you. Another example, for example, you want to make CDs or DVDs of your data and you want to put them somewhere safe. Not in your own house in case of a fire, but you want to put them with family or friends, but you don't want them to accidentally or intentionally look at your data, then as well, encryption could help. You want to mail some documents to friends and they want to encrypt them as well. TrueCrypt could help there as well. Now, for me personally, and that is why I got in touch with TrueCrypt, from this week on, I will have to use a Windows XP system at work next to my Mac OS X, but I'll have to work with it once in a while. And, well, it's an Windows XP with all the Windows service packs on it, all the latest and greatest virus scanners, and Microsoft Defender, and the built-in firewall. But I still don't feel very safe on a Microsoft Windows system. And still, I have to put some important and personal data on it, like all the passwords and usernames I use on different sites. I can't encrypt it or I can't protect it in any way that satisfies me. The Microsoft built-in encryption is, you can do this by right-clicking on a file or a folder, and then you can choose the encryption, the built-in encryption. But I don't have a clue what it exactly does with the data and how it is protected, because when somebody hacks into the Microsoft system, it's still compromised. It's still opened within seconds. So I really needed something, and TrueCrypt is the thing I needed. Before I continue, there is more to TrueCrypt that will ever fit in this podcast. I'll do my best to highlight the most important stuff, but if you're not satisfied with the information I give you, you really have to check out the website, because there are really more to it than I can tell you. Okay, the program. I'll just demonstrate it on my nice, shiny, new laptop. If it will ever start again, because I think it is now in... Oh no, there it is. Yes, that's me. I want to log in. I'm feeling unsafe already with this method of logging into a system. Yes, okay. So TrueCrypt is just an application. You just launch it and then you can create a volume. When you create a volume, it will ask you for a file that you can place wherever you want on your system. Then after you have selected the file, it will ask you how big the file should be. It will ask you for a password and it will ask you for an encryption method. I will elaborate more on that later. So to keep it simple, that's the only thing to it. You create a volume on a file or on a device, and then you can mount it by providing your password, and then you can write data to it. And once you close your laptop or you unmount the volume, your data is completely safe in that file or in that device. Now, it makes this on the fly. It's called on-the-fly encrypting. And why is that? It's because the data is immediately encrypted in RAM before writing it to the volume. That makes that no unencrypted data is written on your machine. And it's immediately decrypted in RAM when you read the stuff of that volume. The encryption used, which is very important as well, this is really standards of a very, very high academic level. In encryption, nothing is magical, nothing is obscure, it's just plain math. And the fact that this application uses open source techniques, open source code, makes it really transparent. You can see what is going on and you can at the same time see that it's completely unhackable. Unless you use thousands of computers during thousands of years. And that's not something you have when you're trying to get some data for a little bank scheme or something like that. I'll give you a quick list of the encryption algorithms used. And I'll read them by the order of the slowest encryption last. That's probably the best but slowest sometimes. Using Twofish, Cast5, Serpent, AES and Twofish, AES, Blowfish, Serpent and AES, Twofish and Serpent, Serpent and Twofish and AES. Those are combined encryption algorithms. Then you have AES, Twofish, Serpent and Triple Des. I chose the AES, Twofish, Serpent. That sounds really, really safe. Now, as I said, you can encrypt a file or you can encrypt a complete volume. The benefits of a single file is that you can move it anywhere you want. You're not confined to the volume you're using, device you're using. The benefits of a device is that it is faster. Now, what is so special about this method of encrypting? What have they done to make it even better? So that's cool. You have your own encrypted volume and you and only you know the password. And so only you can open it. And so only you can read the data. Now that's very nice. But what if you are constrained, are forced to give your password? That's a very important aspect. Sometimes you can get a lawsuit where you are forced to give your password, or they will just throw you in jail for 10 years. I've heard that some countries are already making that a law. Then you could use the plausible deniability that TrueCrypt offers. And it does this by two methods. The first method is one of the most beautiful ones, and they use hidden volumes. Now, those are not volumes or files that are completely hidden on your system. The principle is even better than that. It's a TrueCrypt volume that is created inside another TrueCrypt volume. And you can throw in the first volume, in the outer volume, you can throw in some files which are possible that you don't want people to read. You put in some bank accounts and stuff. But in that same volume, in that first outer volume, there is an inner volume, a second TrueCrypt volume. So it goes like this. When you create a hidden volume, It will ask you for the encryption method for the outer volume. Then it will ask you for the size of the outer volume. Then it will ask for a password. And then it will let you open the outer volume and fill it with the not so important files. It will again ask for the encryption method you want to use. You type in the size of the inner volume you want to use, and then it will ask a password for the inner volume, a new password. Now, when I am forced to open that file, I will only give the password of the outer volume. And nothing important is revealed, only the files that I wish to show to people and let people think that those are the important files I want to hide will be revealed. Now, when I use the inner volume password, the true data I wanted to protect, I wanted to hide from people is revealed. And that is really, really a very nice way of encryption. Nice way of still giving you the possibility to give the password and showing here is my volume, here is everything, but not showing everything. That's the first method of plausible deniability. There is a second thing about the TrueCrypt volumes that are very, very interesting. It is impossible to identify a TrueCrypt file. There is nothing in the file that characterizes the file as a TrueCrypt file. There is no header information. It can't be recognized by the pattern in it. So for example, if you save a file like that, like a MPEG file or an MP3 file of an AUG file, or in my case, I saved my TrueCrypt volume as a FreeBSD 6.1.iso, so just an ISO image, nobody will know. People can double-click on that encrypted file, and the Windows machine will go, choose the program you want to use to open this file, and TrueCrypt will not be listed because there is nothing that points to TrueCrypt. That is a second method of plausible deniability. Some other features that are really nice is you can use it in traveler mode. You can take a USB stick, put your TrueCrypt volume on the USB stick, and as well a TrueCrypt executable. Via the tools menu, you can make a traveler disk. That's via the traveler disk setup. And you just have to choose the USB stick, and voila, you have your own USB stick with your information on it that nobody can decipher, and with the TrueCrypt application on it, so you can use it on any computer you want. Well, maybe not any computer. I will get back on the availability of the program. For programs like CheckDisk or other programs which check files on your system, virus scanners or whatever, the files will look like arbitrary data files. So they won't get discovered in any way. It is just a file. Now, the other really cool thing about this is that the password method used, the encryption method used, is not stored in the file. There you would lose a lot of the benefit of using this program. So what it does, it will try out every password you give it in every encryption method possible. So when you analyze the file, you really have to analyze a lot before you see which encryption method is used. There is no header data. There is not something at the top of the file that says this is encrypted in triple death, for example. There is nothing on it. So that makes it really hard to spot. Imagine just your encrypted files completely hidden into your MP3 or AUG library, nobody will spot it. And these are just the basics of the software. There is a lot more to it. But as I said, you really have to look for it yourself, because it's more than I can just fit into this podcast. Okay, some negative aspects, wish lists. Well, it's not available on macOS X, which is a shame. I have to make my own volume, little volume on macOS X via disk utility. And I can encrypt that as well. That's built in macOS X, but it lacks the features that TrueCrypt has, for example. All the encryption methods, the plausible deniability, for example, you won't have it. But So I would really love to see this one come out for macOS X. A second thing is, it's available under Linux. That's true. They made some improvements in the last years to make it available under Linux as well. But it's only available in a command line mode. Now, while most of you will go, yay, that's what we want, I think a lot of people could use a nice graphical interface just not to be scared away from this program. So if you're a new Linux user and you want some very good encryption on your system, well, try out TrueCrypt, but really read the documentation about the command line interface, because you won't have an easy time getting that stuff to work. Now, people who are used using the command line will have no problem whatsoever. Even more, encrypted volumes that you made on your Windows machine work completely out of the box on the Linux machine and vice versa. I think there are a lot of people contributing to this project, but the two nicknames, I think, of the main authors are Anid, I think he's the main developer, and Syncon, I think he's responsible for the Linux version. It's extremely hard to find information on both of these people. Okay, some tips. This software has a very, very good user guide and a very good online documentation. So there's as well a quick starter's guide for the impatient. But as always, if you're going to use this software for private data or as the only means of storage for encrypted information, then you really have to read the manual very carefully, because there are some safety precautions you really have to look out for. For example, things like quick formatting, NTFS, stuff like that. For example, NTFS volumes on CDs or DVDs, don't do it, because you won't be able to read them off your CDs or DVDs. That's because NTFS on read-only media isn't supported on a Windows system. You can choose things like never save history. That's very important, because the Windows file selector will remember the last path of the last container that you have mount. And that would give a clue to the people who are searching for information on your computer. Don't try to encrypt a partition that isn't empty. Don't do it. It's stated in bold on the side, because that's not what they made this for. Do not encrypt your complete system, for example. It will be completely unusable. The only way you can encrypt a complete operating system is when you use virtualization, for example, with Box, VMware, QEMU, or Virtual PC, for example. And then you can take that file that contains your complete operating system, and then you can encrypt it. But you really have to make an empty volume and put your files and directories in them. If you try to encrypt a file that already exists, it will be completely wiped out. Okay, keep in mind, don't try to encrypt an existing file. It will be overwritten. For example, if you want to use this in a corporate environment, keep in mind that employees lose their passwords. If you want to make a little file on their desktop, which is encrypted, and you put a default password in it, most of the time you want your employees to change that password. But when they lose it, there is no way of retrieving that data. That's something you have to keep in mind as well. With TrueCrypt, if you lose your password, there is no way that you can retrieve the data. That's the whole point of the thing. You really have to remember your password. Now, as a system administrator in the corporate environment, what you could do is make the volume, make the file, and you can backup the header. In the tools menu, there you can choose backup volume header, and that will backup the master password file. When your user changes his password and loses it afterwards, you can use the tools restore volume header, and then you can go back and reset the password. You can use the files as well in read-only mode. So you can put an encrypted file on a file server and have it opened by a lot of people if you do this in read-only. For example, a master file where a lot of passwords and confidential information is stored in would be a very good example. The availability, it's available for Windows XP, Windows XP 64-bit as well, Windows 2000 and Windows 2003. The older version, the first releases, are available for Windows 98 and Windows ME as well, but they are really, really, really old. You shouldn't be using it. You really should be upgrading to newer systems than 98 or Millennium Edition, for example. It's available for Linux. All sorts of distribution packages are available on the website, and the source code is available as well. BSD users, no dice. It's not available for BSD, hence it is not available for macOS X. And I'm really looking forward for the moment that you will make it available for a BSD. I don't care if it's BSD or macOS X. The latest release is 4.2a. You can get it from TrueCrypt.org. The license is not GPL'd. While the source code is available and free to use, it is not GPL. They have their own license and it's stated on the website. Now, I had a quick look at the license and I found the sentence, "This product can be copied and distributed free of charge, including source code." So it doesn't look all that bad. Source code is available and that is the most important. How to support it? You can use the forums they have on their site. Did I mention where you could have check it? It's at truecrypt.org. Maybe I have. You can help people on the fora who are not so successful in using it, or you can submit bug reports, and you can as well donate to the project if you really like it and if you are using it in a corporate environment, for example. And that is at truecrypt.org/donations. Now, as I said, I hope I laid out the most important features of this wonderful program, but you definitely have to check out the site. Okay, done. 20 minutes. I knew this one was going to be very hard to explain, but I think I managed somehow a bit to get to the end of this. Okay.
The little extra.
No. There will be no little extra this time. No, I didn't kill it, but the problem with the little extra is that I only have 2 or 3 minutes to explain it. And okay, that's the whole point of the little extra, I know. But every time when I look at review, I think to myself, this really needed some more time. This really didn't deserve only 2 1-minutes to be explained. And that's a shame. So I think I'm going to drop the little extra completely from the podcast and replace it with something else. Now, replacing it will be a bit of an experiment, because I can do lots of stuff with the 2 1-minutes I have left in the show. And I still want it to be something small, something not too difficult, something not too hard to follow, something really relaxing, something tiny. 3 options came in mind. The first one was to read some updates from freshmeat.net, some project updates. I could read from the POSIX and the macOS X side and the Windows side, just to give you all the latest updates there are to download on freshmeat.net. That's the first. Second possibility is, for example, just read news related to open source in general, but nothing too difficult, nothing too big, nothing too where I have to spend a lot of time on. So no news considering Microsoft and Novell, for example, or Red Hat and Oracle, stuff like that. No, just simple, clear open source news. Or the third possibility is going back in history and just telling little anecdotes concerning open source software. Just the people who made it, the people who were involved in open source, and the little nice anecdotes there are to tell. So 1 project updates, 2 open source news, or 3 history anecdotes. And I would really like you to mail me what your preference would be, or just post it on the website. Or maybe you don't want anything at all. Maybe just one review and that's it. I can do that as well. So it's completely your podcast. You can do with it whatever you want. Some listener feedback. Ross Burton, of the author of Audio Juicer, mailed me, and he thanked me for calling his application Sound Juicer in one occasion. So it's Audio Juicer. And I didn't mention that the manual covers how to create that MP3 pipeline. So you don't have to search the Google sites. You just can get all that information from the manuals of Audio Juicer. Okay, let's wrap it up. Leave your comments on sourcestrong.com or mail me directly via sourcestrong@gmail.com. And in this case, please consider choosing between the source updates or the open source news or the open source anecdotes or nothing at all. Just throw that bit away. The theme song of this podcast is by Brand New Sin, and it's called Freight Train. You can find them on music.podshow.com. I'm leaving you with some very nice jazz, and it's added 3 days ago on music.podshow.com. It is Still by Melissa Forbes. Thanks for your time, and good hunting.
The stillness of the night, a blanket that surrounds us, the sun on the other side, though absent, warms us too. Trees whispering leaves bestow a shimmered blessing. Behold the stars on high, the scent of me and you. I was not expecting you. I was not expecting you. I was not expecting you.